Each morning, for 3 long years, the sun snapped on like a heat lamp as it rose over the Sierra Madre, striking the landscape with blunt force. Nothing had changed from the day before. The wooden water tower soaring above the ground haze, the warrens of thatch and stamped mud spread out like a dirty quilt over the land, the happy ducks bobbing in the Japanese pond by the front gate, the guards performing their calisthenics, the crop of crosses in the field, marking the American graves. Another day, refusing to veer from the seamless sameness of days. Another sunrise in 1,000 sunrises at Cabanatuan prison camp. A.B. Abraham sat in his bunk, waiting for the residuum of the dream to dissipate. The nightmare he'd been having over and over since he first arrived at the camp. He dreamt that skeletons were dancing around his bed. "They beckoned and grinned and leered at me," he recalled. Abraham would shout back at them, "I am human!" But the skulls wouldn't listen. Then he would glance up from his bed and see his own face rotting away. "I, too, was a skull," he said, grinning and leering with the others, a skeleton rattling in the wind. The bugler pushed out the clear, high notes of reveille. The forms issued from the grass buildings. Stove fires roared beneath immense cauldrons of bubbling starch. The men visited the latrines, and then at 5:45 lined up for the day's first bango, roll call. The trappers checked their traps, rat traps, dog traps, to see if the night had brought extra protein. Then everyone who was able-bodied streamed to the mess halls for a ladleful of glutinous rice. With his back to the sun and his mess tin set upon the ground, Abraham squatted low on his haunches, fanning flies with his left hand, while eating breakfast with his right. Tanned by dirt and sun like all the others, his body was clad in a G-string and sandals fashioned from strips cut from old tires. His hair was cropped close to discourage the lice. He had mild cases of malaria and beriberi. He'd lost 40 pounds. But he was, relatively speaking, in fair condition, decidedly not ready to join the dance of skulls above his bed. The Japanese authorities had brought them from O'Donnell to Cabanatuan in June of 1942. After 1,500 Americans had perished at O'Donnell, it had become obvious to the Japanese that they needed another cantonment, a place that was less crudely equipped and geographically better suited to accommodate large numbers of long-term prisoners. They chose Cabanatuan, a pre-war Philippine Army installation which the Japanese considerably enlarged. The camp was named after nearby Cabanatuan City, a bustling regional capital of 100,000 people that was set in the province of Nueva Ecija. Cabanatuan was the centerpiece. All other camps in the Philippines served as satellites. The Japanese used it as a reservoir, a holding station for slave labor. They were constantly shuffling prisoners around. Whenever they conjured up a new work project, a bridge or an airfield that needed repair, they'd draft men from Cabanatuan. Some details were shipped off to Taiwan or Mindanao, Manchuria, or Palawan. In the end, Cabanatuan would become the largest continuously running prisoner of war camp in Asia, and the largest American POW camp ever established on foreign soil. As many as 10,000 Americans would pass through Cabanatuan's gates. Almost exactly 1/4 of those would end up buried beneath the ashen clay just beyond the camp fence.